everybody. Welcome to, this is Tuesday. This is not church night, is it? All day today, I thought it was church night. No, this is Tuesday. Hello. Thanks for tuning in. I think the sound is up too high, Kathy, if you can pot it down. Just I'm making myself deaf here. Just in my headphones, that's right. Ah, that's better. And I'm not sure what to do tonight. I thought what we'd do, just come on the air and tell everybody you get the night off and you can go out and play and, you know, we'll all go do something else. No, can't do that? A coalition of about a dozen environmental groups has filed a lawsuit seeking greater protections as Shell Oil, Royal Dutch Shell, or whatever it's called, prepares to begin drilling up the north slope of Alaska this summer. These groups include Earth Justice, Natural Resources Defense Council, the Sierra Club, Oceana, and the National Audubon Society, have challenged the Interior Department's approval of Shell Oil's plans for responding to a potential disaster. Okay, spill. That's the word they use, spill. But, you know, disaster. As you know, recently, the Interior Department's Bureau of Safety and Environmental Enforcement, yeah, I just got to laugh when I see that, which oversees offshore oil and gas drilling, approved Shell's plans to cap a runaway well and clean up any spilled oil as Shell moves ahead with plans to drill in the Beaufort and Chukchi Seas over the next 2 years. This is from John Broder's New York Times Green blog. Green blog, John Broder. Company officials for Shell and senior Interior Department officials from the Obama administration have said that Shell is putting in place systems that meet or exceed current regulations on drilling safety. Well, all right, let's all stand up and cheer. However, environmental advocates claim that Shell's plans do not provide adequate protection. Ah, here we go again. For endangered and threatened wildlife and fragile shorelines. Oh, who cares about threatened wildlife? Come on. The human race is threatened wildlife. We get right down to it. And as far as fragile shorelines, one word, Louisiana. The environmental advocates contend that no system for capping a well has ever been tested in Arctic waters and that no technology for cleaning up oil in ice formations has ever been successfully demonstrated. There they go again, messing up the corporate position with facts, with challenges that make sense. Damn, damn, damn these environmentalists, right? You know, Shell sits down with the Obama administration. Hey, we got it covered. You do? Oh, yeah. Oh, man. Look at this. Look at this. You see how our cleanup plans are even more than the environmental department wants? How about that? Aren't we good? Pat us on the back. Here. Pat us on the back. Pat us on the back. Oh, a little lower. No, over, up a little bit. Up a little bit. Ah, right there. Pat me right there. Ah! Of course, it's never been tested where they're going to be drilling in icy seas. Of course, it won't be too much longer before the icy seas are not icy anymore. So it's okay. Why worry? And you can bet your bottom whatever that that's precisely what Shell and probably just a whole bunch of people in the Obama administration's the Interior Department's Bureau of Safety and Environmental Enforcement. You can bet that that's probably what they've surmised. Well, look, you guys go ahead and drill your exploratory wells now, and by the time you're ready to drill for oil, there won't be any ice left up there anyway. So it's not an issue. The environmental groups further charge that the Interior Department improperly approved Shell's response plans. And back in March, a couple of months ago, Shell filed an unusual lawsuit in federal court seeking to stop such litigation from environmental groups. but that was not successful. They filed a lawsuit back in March to stop environmental groups from filing a lawsuit. Do you get that? Shell Oil filed a lawsuit requesting that environmental groups not be able to file a lawsuit. It's our courts, goddammit. We own it. We're the oil industry. We're Shell. It's our court. How dare these environmental wackos come in here, right? Oh, my God. So, anyway, if you're so inclined, point your body north, kind of northwest, depending on where you live in the United States. This is generally north. And wave goodbye to the pristine waters of the Arctic Sea. See, you didn't do that where it concerned the Gulf of Mexico. Nobody waved goodbye. And look what happened. Of course, if you watch the ads that are being paid for by BP, come on down to Alabama. This is the best year we've ever. Hey, over here in Louisiana, we eat lots of sea. But here in Florida, in Mississippi, well, hell yeah, we got all kinds of moss dripping off the trees and things have never been better. Yeehaw, come on down. Yes, yes, yes. Look at that. Blue water, white sand, oil. What oil? You've seen those ads, right? Huh? Aren't those great? Don't you just love them? Nothing ever happened. Shh. Just like the woman in the Petroleum Institute ad says, shh, shh, go back to sleep. Everything's okay. There was never a BP spill in the Gulf. That was left-wing propaganda. Shh, 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 shh. And there won't be one in the Arctic. And there was never one any place. Shh. Except maybe over there in Africa. And who cares about that, right? But here? No. Shh. Quiet. I keep getting slammed for what I said about petitions don't work. And, you know, rightly so. I guess I was totally wrong. Rachel at the at change.org, she's the campaigns director, sent me a email. Mike, big news. President Obama has just directed federal officials to grant seasonal wildland firefighters access to federal health care. The news comes after 125,000 people signed a national petition launched on change.org by John Lauer, a Colorado resident and wildland firefighter for 6 years. He said, quote, I've seen crew members' families go into debt simply trying to start a family because they have no coverage. I decided to finally do something about it and started my petition on change.org, never imagining that 125,000 people would support us, end quote. Now, the deal is here, even the wildland firefighters often work the equivalent of an entire year in their 6 to 7 month rotations. They've remained unable to buy into the federal employees' health insurance plan because they are technically seasonal employees. Doesn't that suck? Well, it's changed now. Change.org has this quote. After gathering 125,000 petition signatures and fighting tirelessly on behalf of his crew, John was able to achieve in a month what would normally require an incredibly long bureaucratic process. It's always exciting to see Change.org petitions help government be more accountable and efficient. End quote. John is currently, Rachel writes, fighting a fire in South Dakota. Blah, blah, blah. All right, Rachel, well, point taken. And like I said, I've already claimed that I probably opened my mouth when I shouldn't have about petitions. In fact, sometimes they do work. I stand corrected. Actually, I'm sitting corrected. But corrected nonetheless. We'll be right back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
listening to Mike Malloy. Turn down your speakers. It'll be our secret.
Past the hour. Actually, if you're listening on Sirius XM and you're cruising around in your car, roll your windows down and blast this right out, you know. Especially you cab drivers in New York that are listening and in D.C. Come on, pump up the music. Last night you heard me talk to Mark Canfield from Seattle. He's with Occupy Seattle about the first Occupy National Gathering in Philly on July, I think it was 3rd, 4th, and 5th, or July 4th. And the attendees, there were a couple hundred of them who were invited to participate in a, what is called a visioning process, which sought to answer some questions. For example, what's your vision for a democratic future? What does it look like? What does it include? And I got an email from the National Gathering Working Group today that gives you an idea of what Occupy National is about. The cover email says, during the early days of our movement, many of us arrived at a single answer to the most commonly asked question about our movement. What is the message? After participating in a consensus-based General Assembly, many of us in Philly came to the conclusion that our process itself was the message. Since we seek a world where all voices are heard, all ideas are considered, and all opinions matter, our movement's direct democratic model is more than just a decision-making process. It is a model. Our process is our message became one of our primary guiding philosophies. The following document is not a list of demands or a political platform or a manifesto. It is merely the first step toward developing a collective vision. It is our sincere hope that the onlooking world will reflect on this document and look with new eyes for the purpose of our movement. For those who continue to wonder at our message and goals, this list provides some guidance. It helps to explain what motivates us and why we continue to risk our freedom, our health, and our personal security in order to assert our rights and to work every day toward a better future. It is not intended, this document, to assert our right represent the entire Occupy movement, but it is reflective of a moment in time when people from across the movement gathered together to take stock of where we are, where we've been, and where we're going. Now, finally, it's important to remember that participants were asked about vision, not strategy or tactics. A vision points to the what, not the how. It is the destination, not the path. In this movement, like many others through history, we often declare another world is possible. In the document following, we begin to provide our answers to the obvious follow-up question, but what will this new world look like? So that's the cover letter. And then they what they sent me was the vision as determined by those who participated. And it beside each statement of the vision, there is a numerical value placed. And it took me a while to figure out what that value was. What it represents is how many people agreed out of the couple of hundred plus who attended this gathering. For example, 203 people agreed on clean water, air, and food. Next came free education for all. Next, no war. Then sustainable human society. Then a culture of direct democracy. Next, free universal health care, followed by local food production, community gardens, and permaculture, agriculture, and then economic equality. About seventh down the list, localized economies. Next, military-industrial complex destroyed, military spending slashed. Next, economic system based not on profits, but mutual aid in meeting all human needs. Then came housing for all. Further down, a collective, horizontal, non-hierarchical society. Next, corporate power and influence rejected. Then comes all culture respected equally. Further down, people feel empowered, free, and unafraid. No money in politics. A strong sense of community. No more prison industrial complex. Safety for everyone from domestic violence and fear. Anti-capitalism. All human life valued equally. Absolute transparency in government policy making. A living wage. No corporate personhood. 100% organic food and agriculture. There's more. And I'll continue with this list when we come back. This is the vision put forth by Occupy. And it means nothing to right-wingers. This is just gibberish. This is just nonsense talk. But to people who still have a brain, this is an important document. We'll be right back.
That's safe in a land that's clean and free for every color and culture, every person, every belief. Your greed, your fear, and your lies ain't gonna push me around. I'm gonna use the power I have. I'm gonna vote you right out of that house.
You're listening to Mike Malloy. Turn down your speakers. It'll be our secret.
So, continuing this list that was put together at the July 4th Occupy National Gathering in Philadelphia. And again, the list is not a list of demands or a public platform, a political platform, or a manifesto. It is what the people who attended this concluded would be their vision for a democratic future. You know, what does it look like? What does it include? So you've heard a bunch of stuff now. Continuing the list, transparency is next on the list. Peace, nonviolence, no war or death machines, no military, no need for violent conflict or guns. More humanity, compassion, kindness, and selflessness. Critical thinking and education. Guaranteed work programs. Recognition of indigenous people's rights. Free health care, accessible and state-of-the-art. No genetically modified, no GMOs. And this one, a culture of listening. Wouldn't that be interesting? And I like this, a symbiotic or harmonious relationship with all and everything. Mutually beneficial relationship between humans, the earth, and its inhabitants, and acting with consideration for the community, world, and everything else. End nuclear power and weapons. Free public transportation, environmental justice, to be able to live in love rather than fear. Consensus-based democracy, a just and fair legal system. It just goes on and on. Strict separation of church and state, non-privatized water and other vital natural resources, no subsidies for large corporations, LGBTQ equality, international corporate accountability, no more drug war. Fair trade and fair working conditions. Free global internet access. No global us versus them. a resource-based economy, do away with all large corporations. I like this one, empathy. It goes on and on and on. So, to answer the question that I asked Mark from Seattle last night, what was the outcome of this gathering? It's a vision statement. That's all it is. That's all it has to be. I like this one, too. Being able to hold a two-year-old child and know it will grow up safe. End mandatory safe sentencing. End the ability to profit or benefit from inflicting suffering on someone else. There's a bunch of stuff here. It's too long to, but those I'm going to keep this document. You can probably get it online. Just check or look for A Vision for a Democratic Future, and I'm sure you'll find it. And you ought to find it, print off a copy, and keep it. Again, it's a vision statement. Unlike the Bay City Manifesto or the Weather Underground Manifesto or documents of that sort that were produced in the 60s, this one is not a list of demands. It is not a Port Huron statement. But it's very interesting to read, and as I read over this document earlier today, I started thinking, you know, this is just the way it should be. You know, that's the part that is extremely frustrating to read. This is all of this is just simple, caring, rational acknowledgement of interconnectedness, kind of a wish list for a species that was determined to preserve itself in the earth. On the other hand, maybe you shouldn't find this and print it off, because it may make you sad. When you read this, you may look at it and go, oh my God. End the war machine. End the prison industrial complex. justice, fair play, empathy, consideration. It is not a political statement, although every statement in here could be taken as such, as a political statement. Everything's political, right? Anyway, if you get a chance, whatever. Earlier this month, Texas Republican delegates met in Fort Worth to approve their 2012 platform. Notable parts of which take aim at that state's education system. In the section titled Educating Our Children, the document states that, quote, corporal punishment is effective and recommends teachers be given, quote, more authority to deal with, quote, disciplinary problems. Additionally, the document states that the Republican Party opposes preschool and kindergarten, saying parents are, quote, best suited to train their children in their early development, end quote. Listen to this. Listen to this. Yeah, in the world that Occupy envisions, sure. But show me parents who are able, for whatever reason, to train their children in their early development. Show me those parents. Because we know what those parents are doing. They're struggling just to survive. Ah, But state of Texas Republicans say, no more. No more kindergarten and preschool. That's just collectivism or communism or, you know, too many brown people go to that, you know. Now, the position that these people put together, which is causing the most controversy, these people being the Texas Republicans, is a statement that they oppose the teaching of, quote, higher order thinking skills. They oppose it. Literally, that's what they say. Quote, opposition to the teaching of higher order thinking skills. That's a curriculum that strives to encourage critical thinking. This is what the direct opposite of what Occupy laid out as one of their visions. No more critical thinking because it might challenge, quote, a student's fixed beliefs and undermine parental authority. Direct quote. A student with fixed beliefs? What the hell is that? A robot? Whose ass are these Republicans blowing smoke up? Nothing to challenge a student's fixed beliefs. What kind of fixed beliefs? Except poisonous, bigoted ones, for the most part, do seven-year-olds have? They don't have fixed beliefs. They're very fluid. And these goddamn Republicans, these right-wingers, these monstrous aberrations of human beings want to kill creative thought, critical thinking, inquisitive minds, challenging responses from children. Kill it! Kill it! Quick! My God. The party also notes its encouragement of legislation that prevents, quote, non-citizens unlawfully present in the United States from enrolling in public schools. In March, U.S. Secretary of Education Arne Duncan told Bloomberg he felt, quote, very, very badly for Texas students. Texas may have the lowest high school graduation rate in the country, Duncan said. Oh, my God. Absolute declaration that students should not be taught higher. What do they call it? They should not be taught higher order thinking skills. My God.
Must have a code that you can live by, and so become yourself, because the past is just a goodbye. Teach your children well, their father's hell did slowly go by.
Petitions thing that I was railing against the other night. I guess I really did, too. I just went nuts on that. Go ahead and sign your goddamn petition. I really did, didn't I? This is from Patricia. Michael, first and foremost, longtime listener, want to let you know how important your show is to me. The Military Religious Freedom Foundation seems to be getting things done with online petitions. The reason I'm writing is to let you know how important these petitions are to me. My husband and I are truck drivers. We stay out a month at a time away from home. The online petitions allow me to feel like I'm taking part in things that are important to me. Also, they keep me informed by asking for signatures. I don't mindlessly sign all petitions that come my way. I do read them and try to stay away from the mundane and infantile. As things change, albeit slowly and imperceptibly, in our once great country, I'll keep signing. I'll also sign the online petitions for keeping the Mike Malloy Show on SiriusXM. Are there petitions out there for that? Not because of low listenership, but rather because the powers to be just can't tolerate all that left-wing information coming out. First Mike, then one by one, dot, dot, dot. Much love and appreciation, Patricia. Is there a petition to keep us on? No, I don't think so. I remember when Air America, the right-wingers who took over Air America, the first program they dropped was mine. Then they dropped Rachel. Then they dropped Sam Cedar. But in order to put on something called Satellite Sisters, remember that? That was an ABC syndicated garbage pit. Because Air America said the they would receive $200,000 from so we were gone, and we had 22,000 signatures on an online petition. I kept saying to people, "Don't bother. It doesn't matter. It does not matter. It could have been 220,000. It could have been 2 million. It doesn't matter." But I've gotten several emails now in the past couple of days telling me, you know, you're not correct on that one, Malloy. Petitions get things done. Okay. All right. Republican presidential nominee Mitt Romney today released this letter to the American people. Dear American person, as many of you know, in recent days, my opponent has spread the rumor that, one, I have refused to make my tax returns public, and two, I've hidden my money in bank accounts in Switzerland and the Caymans. These two rumors, while true, have made me look very bad. So I thought I would take this opportunity to explain my finances in terms even a poor person could understand. Let's say you meet the love of your life and you wrote her a series of passionate love letters. In these letters, you told her how you intended to protect her, cherish her, and always keep her safe. And then let's say somebody went and told you that you had to make those love letters available for the world to see. If you're even half the man I am, you'd say, heck no! Well, in my case, the love of my life is my money. If you don't believe me, ask Ann. And my tax returns are like my love letters to my money, detailing the lengths to which I'll go to keep my precious money from being taken away from me. If you think I should make those love letters public, then I'm sorry, my friend, but you don't believe in love. Now, let's say you asked the love of your life to marry you, and you're fortunate enough that she said yes. Should someone be able to force you to spend your honeymoon in a ratty room at some Motel 6 where God knows what crackheads and whores slept before you? Or should you be allowed to take your bride to a 5-star Swiss chateau, perhaps, or an exclusive beach on Grand Cayman? I think you see where I'm going with this. In conclusion, if refusing to release my tax returns and having foreign bank accounts is wrong, I don't want to be right. I did it all for love. And as your president, I promise I will never, ever come between you and the thing you love. You know, unless you're gay. Vote for me, Mitt Romney. From the Borowitz Report. Andy Borowitz. Through BorowitzReport.com, I believe. Speaking of that, just remind me. Hold on a second. Hey, Satan! Hello? Down in hell. Hello, Saint. Oh, hey, there you are. Hey, what's up? What's up? Really? Yeah, it's hot up here, too. Yeah, yeah. I was just reading something by somebody named Andy. Not the Andy that you've got down there. I just want to ask you, how's Andy doing? Really? You're kidding. How many times did he do that? OMFG. That's really... Yeah, and then you did what to him? With the starfish thing? Oh, my God. You're kidding. And he... What did he do? Yeah, well, that, you know, it's to be expected. That's pretty painful. All right, well, listen, just thought I'd check in. All right, yeah. I know. No. You'll never see me down there, pal, because I know you don't exist. But anyway, take... Huh? He wants to know what's going on up here? Well, tell him Planned Parenthood is still operating. Yeah, and that Acorn is making a comeback. That'll frost his ass, in a manner of speaking. Okay. All right, Satan. Take care. I know you're busy. Okay. All right. All right, take care. Whew. always makes me nervous. Those phone calls, or, well, not phone calls, you know, but those conversations with hell. It's just a little scary. All right, we're going to take a break. Here's the top of the hour. When we come back, dumbassery redefined. Mitch McConnell's plans for a Republican Senate. And some stuff about the Christian identity movement. Also, from alternate.org, atheism is winning across the world. Yeah, well, I would hope so. And prayer in school in Mississippi. I know it's not church night, but... oh, and angels. I got to tell you something about angels. Oh, man, you're going to love this one. Stay around. I'm Mike Malloy.
As a referral.
It is 7 past the hour. This is the Malloy Program. Hour 2. Before we get to dumbassery redefined, this hour is being sponsored by Jay Cruzen. His message from JC is July 13th is my son's birthday. Happy birthday, Connor. I'll play this for you when you're older. Other than that, Mike, I want to thank you for spreading truth, no matter how depressing it is. Call Rick Scott a rancid piece of blank for what he's doing to the state I live in, and say the same for the Republican legislature in my home state of North Carolina for overriding Governor Perdue's veto on fracking and defunding Planned Parenthood. I'd call Scott a son of a bitch, but I can't insult someone's mother since mine died back in February. Keep it lit. Signed, JC. Thank you, JC. Happy birthday, Connor. 13. Wow. Happy birthday, Connor. Wisconsin State Senator Glenn Grothman. Wisconsin, what is happening to you people? This freak has introduced a bill demonizing single parents by classifying them as child abusers. Single parents. He has introduced something called Senate Bill 507. And it specifically requires a state agency in Wisconsin, the Child Abuse and Neglect Prevention Board, to emphasize non-marital parenthood as a contributing factor to child abuse and neglect. Well, Glenn Grothman, there's just enough truth to what you say to make you look like a total dumbass, because if it were not for Republican policies, single parents, I know I was one for 14 years, you half-witted bastard. Single parents might have a better chance of raising their children in a calm, rational manner, but because of people like you, Glenn Grothman, it's a constant struggle. And again, I know I've been there. How about you, Glenn? Have you ever done anything with your child except beat his ass, if you have any? Here's a couple of facts. A third of Wisconsin parents are single parents. A third. But this law affects even more than those people. The way the law refers to, quote, non-marital parenthood, end quote, also makes this applicable to non-married couples, including same-sex couples. Why, of course! That's the whole point! The bill has several sections. Here's section one. It promotes statewide educational and public awareness campaigns and materials for the purpose of developing public awareness of the problems of child abuse and neglect. In promoting those campaigns and materials, the board shall emphasize non-marital parenthood as a contributing factor to child abuse and neglect. You sons of bitches, how about adding into your little bill the fact that in certain Christian households, beating a child almost senseless, raising welts on the poor child's ass, or bringing blood to the surface of his skin is what a lot of Christian parents believe the Bible tells them to do. How about that, Glenn, you creepy bastard, you? How about that? Do that, Glenn Grothman! Section 2 would require a dissemination of information about the problems of and methods of preventing child abuse and neglect to the public and to organize organizations concerned with those problems. Blah, 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 blah. Now, according to what I have here, this freak is not just some fringe nut job. He's a nut job, but not a fringe. He's the assistant majority leader and an ally of Governor Scott Walker. Unlike Walker, Grothman was not up for recall because activists were unable to get enough signatures. Grothman, in case you didn't know, is not a fan of welfare policies. In a flyer detailing his family policies, he says, the left and the social welfare establishment want children born out of wedlock because they're far more likely to be dependent on the government. Jesus Christ, these people are ignorant savages, aren't they? I mean, they're like tree dwellers. The Capital Times writes, I guess as long as this state is... He touched on those issues after introducing the bill. He went on to say, I guess as long as this state is going to fund a group called the Child Abuse and Neglect Prevention Board, at least that group could use the money that they have to publicize something that's politically incorrect. But I think has to be said in our society, yeah, that single parents are potential abusers! Representative Chris Taylor, a Democrat from Madison, said this bill is an assault on women. She said, quote, what this bill does is call out and chastise women who have babies and are unmarried. Family studies professor Dave Riley told the Badger Herald newspaper that family type has far less impact than the family process, and that research shows that, quote, leaving a conflictual marriage actually improves parent-child relationships, end quote. But you see, to these right-wingers, especially the right-wing Christians in the South and the Midwest, no matter how miserable it gets, a woman has to stay there. And if she decides to get away from the abusive son of a bitch who's just doing what the Bible tells them to do, then somehow she is condemnable, and the children are going to suffer. Beat them with a Bible, Glenn. Why don't you do that? Why don't you take kids who are unmanageable, or however you want to put it, you filthy pig? Why don't you just beat them with a Bible? Just beat them, huh? single parents to this freak are somehow potential disasters. I'm going to forward this story, Kathy, to my son, Chris. Well, your stepson now, too. But I'll forward it to Chris, who's now working on his master's in nursing. He's going to be a nurse practitioner and open his own clinic in a little town in South Carolina where the family GP is retiring. And it's going to leave the community without a physician. He's going to be retiring just about the time that Chris will complete his advanced studies. And when he was a kid growing up, I spanked him one time. One time. Which kind of amazes me. One time. And I remember that because it only happened one time. It was two swats on the butt, and then I realized, what are you doing? Molly, on the other hand. No, I'm just kidding. Well, Molly is ferociously independent. I mean, this kid is just, I'm getting into personal claptrap here. But it just pisses me off when you have some freakish little gnome like this Senator Glenn Beetlebutt or whatever his name is in Wisconsin trying to introduce a bill, and it will be introduced, that identifies single parents as a font of child abuse and neglect. You nasty little prick. Lord, and I can't drive on the left side of the road.
Your nightly ammunition against right-wing rhetoric. Get locked and loaded with Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. All right, a little support on the petition thing. This is from Kauai John, Kauai, Hawaii. Mike, everyone that tells you the petitions work are both right and wrong. The so-called success of a petition always depends on what the petition is about. Let's see a petition that calls for the prosecution of George W. Bush for murder. How successful would that be? Yet, how much more important would that be than all the BS everyone is telling you is a success? Okay, it's not BS, but it is just changing the icing on a blank cake. You people are tossing some real terms at me tonight, right? Okay. He goes on, I really want to believe that petitions have an effect, but I know deep inside that you are absolutely right. We are allowed to win the small stuff, but when it comes to the important stuff, nothing. Nothing will change until we throw our bodies on the machine. Signing a petition isn't even close. If people want reform, they must do more than they can even imagine. How do I know? Because I'm not going to do it. And I feel the shame of my cowardice. I don't know, John. When the barricades go up, I think you'll be right there with your body in the machine. With a lot of us who still believe, really believe, in the idea of freedom. Real freedom. Not greed freedom, not selfish freedom, not me, mine freedom, but the kind of freedom that is nurturing to everybody in the on the planet. Mitch McConnell's plans for a Republican Senate? Nothing. This is from Jonathan Bernstein at the Washington Post Plumline. he says that if the Republican Party does take the Senate in 2012, their plan is essentially to let people keep suffering. Talking to National Journal's Chris Fraits, Mitch McConnell made it clear that as far as he's concerned, there's absolutely nothing that the government should be doing right now that's any different from what he would want if the economy was booming. What is this little turtle bastard's agenda? Repealing health care reform. And, of course, they have nothing to replace it with except same old garbage. Repealing health care reform, cutting the deficit, and reducing regulation. And according to Bernstein, it's even worse than that. McConnell said in the National Journal interview that there's nothing more important than the deficit, which is entirely responsible for, in his view, slow growth. But, of course, repealing the Affordable Care Act would increase the deficit, as would locking in the Bush tax cuts. These Republicans are just slimy, filthy sons of bitches. They lie through their teeth. I'm not quoting from the blog right now, as you could probably guess. They lie through their teeth. Because they know that the people who vote them into office are just dumber than hell. So McConnell can advocate for repealing the Affordable Care Act, which may or may not be a good idea, but on the basis that he wants to repeal it. It's ludicrous because it will increase the budget deficit that all of a sudden Mitch McConnell finds sacrosanct, right? McConnell offered not one word either to the National Journal or to CNN the same day when he was interviewed as to anything specific that he would do to make up for those deficit-increasing measures that he supports. It shouldn't surprise anyone that the Republicans don't have a plan. After all, without their stifling of job creation measures and layoffs of public employees, unemployment would in fact be lower. But Sarah Jaffe at Alternate writes, it's still pretty amazing how blatant they're willing to be about it. Their plan is quite simply to undo anything that Obama did and then continue the race to the bottom. So what are you going to do, Truth Seeker, about all that, huh? What are you going to do? Is there anything you can do? Or not? Anything? Okay, we have a break coming here momentarily. When we come back, even though it's not church night, there's a couple of articles here that I want to share with you. This one about angels. This is really freaky. I mean freaky in a totally negative, dumbassery sense. Angels, for God's sake. Angels. I also have a note of appreciation from the rich, and it is I'm sorry, but it's written by an anonymous person who didn't want their name to be used, but I'll share it with you anyway. All right, stick around, we'll be back. I'm Mike Malloy.
The radio, listen to the radio.
It's Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. This is great. A note of appreciation from the rich. Written by someone who wishes to remain anonymous. I don't know who it is. Just says anonymous. Let's be honest, you'll never win the lottery. On the other hand, the chances are pretty good that you'll slave away at some miserable job the rest of your life. That's because you were, in all likelihood, born into the wrong social class. Let's face it, you're a member of the working caste. Sorry. As a result, you don't have the education, upbringing, connections, manners, appearances, and good taste to ever become one of us. In fact, you'd probably need a book the size of the Yellow Pages to list all the unfair advantages we have over you. That's why we're so relieved to know that you still continue to believe all those silly fairy tales about justice and equal opportunity in America. Of course, in a hierarchical society, a social system like ours, there's never been much room at the top to begin with. Besides, it's already occupied by us. And we like it up here so much that we intend to keep it that way. But at least there's usually someone lower in the social hierarchy you can feel superior to and kick in the teeth once in a while. Even a lowly dishwasher can easily find some poor slob further down in the pecking order to sneer and spit at. So, be thankful for migrant workers, prostitutes, and homeless street people. Always remember that if everyone like you were economically secure and socially privileged like us, there would be no one left to fill all those boring, dangerous, low-paid jobs in our economy, and no one to fight our wars for us or blindly follow orders in our totalitarian corporate institutions, and certainly no one to meekly go to their grave without having lived a full and creative life. So please keep up the good work. You also probably don't have the same greedy, compulsive drive to possess wealth, power, and prestige that we have. And even though you may sincerely want to change the way you live, you're also afraid of the very change you desire, thus keeping you and others like you in a nervous state of limbo. So, you go through your life mechanically playing your assigned social role, terrified what others would think should you ever dare to break out of the mold. Naturally, we try to play you off against each other whenever it suits our purposes. High-wage workers against low-wage, unionized against non-unionized, black against white, male against female, American workers against Japanese, against Mexican, against, you know. We continually push your wages down by invoking foreign competition, the law of supply and demand, national security, or the bloated federal deficit. We throw you on the unemployed scrap heap if you step out of line or jeopardize our profits. And to give you an occasional break from the monotony of our daily economic blackmail, we allow you to participate in our stage-managed electoral shell game, better known to you ordinary folk as elections. Happily, we have realized you haven't a clue as to what's really happening. Instead, you blame aliens, tree-hugging environmentalists, black folks, Jews, welfare queens, and countless others for your troubled situation. We're also very pleased that many of you still embrace the work ethic. Even though most jobs in our economy degrade the environment, undermine your physical and emotional health, and basically suck your one and only life right out of you. We obviously don't know much about work, but we're sure glad you do. Of course, life could be different. Society could be intelligently organized to meet the real needs of the general population. You and others like you could collectively fight to free yourselves from our domination. But you don't know that. In fact, you can't even imagine that another way of life is possible. And that's probably the greatest, most significant achievement of our system, robbing you of your imagination, your creativity, your ability to think and act for yourself. So, we'd truly like to thank you from the bottom of our heartless hearts Your loyal sacrifice makes possible our corrupt luxury. Your work makes our system work. Thanks so much for knowing your place without even knowing it. Signed, the 1%. Ow! Oh, I want to kick somebody's ass after reading that. Huh? Oh! I'm going to have to take a break. Woo! Email from Crispin. Mike, a couple of nights ago, as a matter of fact, in sharing with us a story about a Christian identity rally, you at first referred to them as murderous, though you quickly disavowed this particular term because you believed that they hadn't really murdered anyone yet. However, it's my contention that they have. Back in the 80s, an angry white supremacist named Robert J. Matthews formed an organization called The Order. Among other things, they robbed a sex shop in Seattle, several banks, and a couple of armored trucks. They also bombed a synagogue and established a large-scale counterfeiting operation. Ultimately, they murdered Alan Berg, a Denver talk show host who happened to be both Jewish and a liberal. I'm bringing all of this up because Matthews recruited most of his Confederates from within Reverend Richard Butler's Church of Jesus Christ Christian, once the veritable flagship of the Christian identity movement. It was based at the heavily fortified Aryan Nations compound near Hayden Lake, Idaho. Because Butler's church ultimately facilitated formation of the order, I personally hold it as responsible for Berg's murder as the militants themselves. It also bears saying that some years after the capture and incarceration of various order members, another similar group, calling itself the Order 2, also began to form within the confines of the Church of Jesus Christ Christian. Fortunately, it was broken up by the feds before they could really do any harm, but if they'd been able to carry on, they would have instigated a frenzy of robberies and murders just like their forebears in the original order. Neither of these groups could have formed outside the context of the Church of Jesus Christ Christian. It drew white supremacists from all over the western U.S. and beyond. It openly preached a doctrine of racial hatred, feeding the paranoid visions of assorted diaphanous chromosome stacks, and consistently refused to disavow violence, thereby encouraging its followers to go out and crush, kill, and destroy. So yes, identity, Christianity's hands are red with blood. Sincerely, Crispin in Seattle. Yeah, I thought about it after I said that. You know, it's the Christian identity movement, the Christian Reconstruction movement is the only reason I am and have been for the longest time now licensed to carry in the great state of Georgia, where we have a Stand Your Ground law. But it's only because of that. You know, I was never threatened by right-wingers. As a matter of fact, right-wingers are kind of afraid of me. But the Christian identity, the Christian Reconstruction movement, those people are goddamn insane. I mean, they're just nuts, totally. They're like religious terrorists of any stripe. They really do believe that any kind of violence they commit in the name of their twisted, perverted sense of God or Messiah enables them to go straight to heaven. So it's very difficult. The only thing you can do with those kind of people is defend yourself against them. You can't talk with them. You can't rationalize with them. You can't pray with them. You can't meet with them. You just have to defend yourself against them. And I've said it many times on this program over the years, you know, after repeated threats, after bomb threats. It was so funny at WSB, this bastion of right-wing broadcasting, to watch them have to clear the building, I think, twice. Maybe it was three times, a long time ago, because of bomb threats, because of me. Oh, you Christian identity people, you are really something. So it was because of that that I was advised by the Atlanta Police Department Homicide Squad, no less. Well, Mr. Malloy, we don't want to tell you what to do, but we would suggest that you might consider taking a course in firearms. And matter of fact, out here at DeKalb County Firing Range, Police Firing Range, we will be happy to provide an instructor. And once you're qualified, you get... This is back in the day. Back in the day when you had to go through a whole bunch of stuff to get a permit to carry. I guess now all you have to do is walk in and show your Republican voter registration card. Here's a gun for you. Here's another one. How many you want? Here, we got rifles. We got shotgun. Here, we got a semi-automatic. Here, you want a fully automatic? Here, how about this Glock 9? Hey, we got a bunch over here. We got an AK-47 here. How about a Kalashnikov? We got those too. Oh my God, you want a 50 caliber sniper rifle? We got that. Everything we got. There you go.
It's Mike Malone.
10 before the hour. This hour has been sponsored by Jay Cruzen. His message, July 13th is my son's birthday. Actually, he'll be 7 years old. I just found out. Happy birthday, Connor. Dad writes, I'll play this for you when you're older. Let me add happy birthday also. Connor. Other than that, Mike, JC writes, I want to thank you for spreading truth, no matter how depressing it is. Call Rick Scott a rancid piece of blank for what he's doing to the state I live in. And say the same of the Republican legislature in my home state, North Carolina, for overriding Governor Perdue's veto on fracking and defunding Planned Parenthood. I'd call Scott a son of a bitch, but I can't insult someone's mother since mine died back in February. Keep it lit, JC. Well, JC, okay, I never felt like I was insulting someone's mother when I called him a son of a bitch. You know, I really didn't. I felt like I was saying something that was just derogatory and nasty and hateful and filled with piss and vinegar, just as a way of releasing my own safety valve. Like those old pressure cookers your grandma used to have. That's one of the reasons I use such terrible language on the air. You know, during the day, I don't use such vulgar language. I really don't. For a number of reasons, not the least of which, I have an 8-year-old almost in the house. And Kathy would be very offended if I used that kind of language. She'd grab the lava soap and start pointing towards the bathroom. Will I stop?
Okay. Well, Mike is trying to be very kind, but the truth is I probably have a filthier little potty mouth than he does on a given day. So just be honest. Just keeping it real.
Anyway, I don't really talk like that during the day. I don't. Long about 4 o'clock in the afternoon when I start doing some show prep, though, it starts to come out. I'll be down here in the studio, and Kathy might be in another room in the house, and she'll hear me, and she'll, you know, I can hear her coming down the steps. She'll peek her head in the studio and say, oh, you're doing show prep, huh? So, no, I don't use that kind of language normally. But when I get into these reports and blogs and stories and examples of this monumental destruction of this country brought about by right-wing Caucasian racist Republicans, I lose it. And a couple of not Caucasian right-wingers too. Alan West comes to mind right away. And it's difficult to, you know, I've said it before, I'm just not an enlightened spirit. You know, I'm still the, what's the opposite of enlightened? Unenlightened. So the idea of letting all that flow through, just, you know, I haven't gotten to that point yet. Probably never will. So it comes out in the program. And I've apologized many, many times. I've apologized to the station owners who carry this program, to the program directors who sit there and say, oh, my God, Malloy, stop. I've apologized to the audience. I don't even do a kids' night anymore. We used to do teenagers' night. Well, kids' night. For, what was it, Kathy? Kids 13 through 18, yeah. Don't do it anymore because I'm hoping that you know, young teenagers don't listen to this program. This program has changed radically over the years. Like I say, it's come to the point now where, it's just like a, I don't know, like a meeting in the evening, sitting down around this electronic campfire and, letting loose of all those frustrations. There are no, we don't look for solutions on this program. We don't look for challenges on this program. There are, I think Tom Hartman does a good job of that. I think Sam Cedar does a good job. I think the Young Turks do a good job of that. You know, I think Bob Kincaid does a good job of that. I think Norman Goldman does a good job of that. But, you know, that's not what I do. And, you know, a heavy critic would say, all you do is bitch. That's very true. That's not a criticism. That's a statement of fact. But you got to have some place where you can go, don't you? And release all that steam that builds up during the day. I don't know if it happens to you. It does with me. I usually start the day feeling, you know, like, ah, the sun is up. Oh, listen to the birds. Oh, look out in the woods. Oh, what's that? Is that a vampire trying to make a home before the sun is fully up? Or is it a coyote? Whatever it is. Isn't it lovely? But, you know, within a couple, 3 hours, I try not to watch any television news, just read the New York Times. But within a couple hours, right, this cloak of rage starts to descend again. But anyway, all that to say, happy birthday to Connor. I don't know where that started. Connor is 7 years old on the 13th. That's a great age. We have one who's just leaving age 7 and going into age 8. And those are magical years for kids. They really are. They're still not sure about the existence of fairies and magic. They still are not quite sure. You know, they're at that age where Kat Mary sent, in Memphis, sent this to me a long time ago. It's a quote from G.K. Chesterton. Fairy tales do not tell children the dragons exist. Children already know that dragons exist. Fairy tales tell children the dragons can be killed. Would that it were true. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour. Phone lines are open. 877-996-2556. 877-996-2556 if you'd like to call in. Saginaw, Michigan was this story, sadly, it reminds me of Bruce Springsteen's song American Skin. It's reported by MichiganNBCNews.com. After listening to public outcry from a packed council chamber at the first meeting of Saginaw City Council since the July 1st police shooting of Milton Hall, 49, of Saginaw, Councilman Norman Braddock called for a federal investigation, saying, quote, the community is traumatized. Six Saginaw police officers have been placed on administrative leave pending the result of the current Michigan State Police investigation of the incident. Police have said that Milton Hall was holding a knife and, quote, acting aggressively, end quote, when they shot him in self-defense. Hall was shot by the police 46 times. 46 times. And guess what? Police microphones and cameras all of a sudden just didn't work the night of the incident. Nothing worked. The microphones went dead. The cameras stopped working. Saginaw Police and Michigan State Police have refused NBC 25 requests for comments pending the outcome of the investigation. Saginaw Pastor Robert Davis, Jr. says the officers should not be paid while on leave. Quote, why are the officers at home on vacation on taxpayer dollars? I ask that the mayor, city council, chief of police, whomever, take them off the payroll until the investigation is complete. End quote. Oh, did I mention that the man who was shot 46 times when the cameras and the microphones for some strange reason stopped working is a black man? Did I mention that yet? I didn't. Well, you probably already guessed it, didn't you? Of course you did. Of course you did. You knew that. Saginaw area NAACP representative Terry Pruitt also spoke and asked that the officers and their levels of training for lethal force situations be revealed. Milton Hall was described as homeless, but the San Francisco Chronicle is reporting this evening that his mother, Jewel Hall, says her son Milton had a Saginaw apartment. In the same article, the paper also reports that Hall is the son of an Albuquerque, New Mexico activist who has crusaded for investigations of over 24 officer-involved shootings in the Albuquerque area since 2010. Do you get that? The man who was shot 46 times by Saginaw police because he came toward them with a knife aggressively, so they had to stop him. 46 shots. And his father is a New Mexico activist who has crusaded for investigations of over 24 officer-involved shootings in Albuquerque since 2010. His name is Milton Hall. He's dead with 46 bullets in him because on the night that the police cameras and microphones all, just for some amazing reason, they all stopped. Nothing worked. So there's no way to show how aggressively and belligerently and such a threat this man was with his knife. that they had to shoot him 46 times. Have you got that song? Play that for a minute. Would you please? Would you? Go ahead. Shots. Of course, that wasn't Amadou Diallo that the song was written about. Is it a gun? Is it a knife? Is it your wallet? This is your life. I just, you know, when I see these stories about an African-American man who shot 46 times because he had a knife and was acting aggressively. And I guess ever since the Rodney King case all those years ago, when the officers of the law decide to murder somebody, they make sure the cameras and the microphones are off. Huh? You think? No? I'm real wrong here? You think so? 46 times the Saginaw police shot this man. 46 times. How many shots is that? Bang, 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 bang. Bang. That's 46 shots. Wow. Okay. Your phone calls when we come back after this break. It's just hard to, I cannot imagine being an African-American parent and having a son, or for that matter, a daughter, and having to explain to my kids what they're up against. I can't imagine that.
Cross this bloody river to the other side. 41 shots cut through the night. You're kneeling over his body in the vestibule, praying for his life. Well,
your day screaming with Mike Malloy.
When all our rights have been taken away, would you have guessed that a little collie weed could ever bring all of these vultures in a bee? What it feels like we're living in a police state.
21 past the hour. Okay, here's the last one, then we're going to your phone calls here. A former police officer who retired from the FBI due to PTSD that was linked to her role in the aftermath of the September 11 terror attacks. This police officer has written a book about seeing not one, not ten, but legions of angels guarding the Pennsylvania site where a hijacked airliner crashed. Lily Leonardi served as a liaison between law enforcement and the families of the passengers and crew members killed in Flight 93 crash. She arrived on the scene about 3 hours after the crash. Her book, In the Shadow of a Badge, a spiritual memoir, centers on her vision of angels, but she argues that her life has been changed more by what she didn't see that day. She said, quote, "The biggest thing for me is that there were no bodies." Let me repeat that. The biggest thing for me, she got there 3 hours after the crash. The biggest thing for me is that there were no bodies. She remembers the burning pine and the jet fuel stinging her nostrils. She said she also remembers a smoldering crater littered with debris, too small to associate with the jetliner or 40 passengers and crew on board. Leonardi said, quote, "I'm used to crime scenes, but this one blew me out of the water. It just looked like the ground had swallowed up the plane." And then she says, "That's when I started seeing, like, shimmery lights. And it was kind of misty. And that's when I first saw, like, the angels there. And I didn't say anything to the guys because you can imagine if I would have said, hey, I just saw angels on the crash site, they would have called the office and they would have said, she lost her mind. Tell her to go home." Instead, Leonardi kept all this to herself for the better part of 2 years as emotional and physical ailments surfaced that she would later learn were caused by PTSD. She began telling a close circle of friends and colleagues what she saw, including her former supervisor. Her former supervisor is now retired, lives near Cocoa Beach. He was chief of the FBI's operational response section, which sent laboratory teams to gather evidence from each of the September 11 terror sites. Blah, blah, blah. McCabe told the, his name is McCabe. He told the Associated Press, quote, "I believe her. I read the whole book. I know she believes 100% that's what she saw. I know she's a sane person, so I'm not going to discount what she said she saw." No bodies. None. So it's what she didn't see that is more intriguing to me. Rather than what she feels that she did. I mean, sure, if you arrive at a crash scene where 40 people have just died in a monstrous air crash and there are no bodies, but you see in the smoke and the mist shimmering lights, So does anybody want to take, pardon the expression, a shot at that one? How do you have a plane crash? And remember, it's just supposed to be a crash, even though debris from this plane crash was found all over the county, right? I mean, as if it had been hit by a missile. But no bodies. Did they find bodies at the Pentagon crash site? don't remember that either. I don't think so. It's interesting, isn't it? Oh, but listen. No. We know the official story. Be quiet. Sit down. No more discussion about this. All right. That's all. Take it easy. Think of elephants. Think of elephants. La, 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 la. Think of elephants dancing on, in a Disney cartoon. Think of dancing elephants. We're not going to think about no bodies. No. La, 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 la. Before the hour, no luggage, no bodies, no seats, no fuselage. Not at the Pentagon either. Reg thinks angels took them all to heaven. Yeah. But why the luggage? Boo! Oh well. Mark is at El Paso, listening on XM. Hi, Mark.
Hey, Mike, how you doing tonight?
I'm all right. How are you?
Oh, good, good. It's all this Christian identity thing. I did a research paper for college. I went to college a lot later in life. I'm almost 54. This is about 9 years ago. But anyway, I did a research paper on this. And, you know, that Timothy McVeigh was a subscriber to this. So these people, they're terrorists. And I had mentioned this to the class, and a person spoke up, and she got really upset. She goes, "How dare you call these people Christian?" I said, "Well, how dare you call the 9/11 hijackers responsible?" And she got really upset. But it's a really twisted belief. And there was a book written, Turner Diaries. It was an awful, awful book. I tried to read it for this research paper, and I had to go take a shower after two chapters. I couldn't get through it. But there's a book called Religion and the Racist Right, and it's by Michael Barkun, and it's a very good book, and it describes this twisted thing these people believe in. It's sick, Mike. I
mean, yeah, it's real violent, ignorant, racist stuff. And the problem is, you know, you get some half-witted person who was brought up on Pentecostalism or certain types of evangelical Christianity, and you feed this into their head, you're gonna have a killer on your hands. You're gonna have a Timothy McVeigh, or you know, maybe one not so notorious as McVeigh, but someone who is willing to kill because he is convinced, and it's always a he's convinced that in doing so, he's making Jesus happy, or he's taking out the apostates or the bad people. I mean, this is one of my fundamental complaints about religion. It is so easy to twist it into something. Well, I don't mean twisting it into something that's not designed to be, because if you look at religion as it's presented in the holy books, it is violent beyond belief. I don't care what book you look at. Look at the Old Testament, New Testament, the Quran. I don't care what you look at. The violence is just, it's just, all these books are just dripping with blood and murder and mayhem and rape and incest and violence and genocide. And then people want to tell me, oh, well, Mike, you know, it's more than that. Yeah? Okay.
And you can't convince them otherwise. I tried to talk to this person after class, and she goes, well, it's different. It's different. I said, how is it different? It just is. And she walked away.
Right, it just is. Absolutely, it just is.
But anyway, it's just a very vile, terrible, terrible thing we have out there. And the more people, we need to make people aware of this.
I know.
It's awful.
Well, I've said it enough times on this program that I'm sure it irritates people, but the quotation from Denis Diderot, the French philosopher who said centuries ago that mankind will never be free until the last king is strangled with the entrails of the last priest. And I just so agree with that. Yeah, that's the truth. Thanks, Mark.
Okay, sure. All right. Mike, you have a good night.
Thank you, sir. Thanks for checking in. Philip is in San Diego. You're listening on TuneIn Radio?
Yeah, TuneIn Radio on your little app that you have there.
Oh, yeah, okay, gotcha.
And it's fabulous. Yeah, there were no bodies in the Pentagon because, well, they evacuated everybody. And the wingspan of the plane didn't match the impact, but maybe there were angel wings there, so that might give some people
why?
Some comfort.
You know, I don't get it, Philip. Why is there no inquiry by our respectable news, television news anchor people? Why has 60 Minutes not done this? Why has the new program, what is it, 30 Rock or whatever it is, the one with Brian Williams and News Magazine, why have none of our crack investigative reporters not gotten into this story? I guess nobody cares. You know, I keep thinking about all the cameras, all the video surveillance machines, video surveillance cameras that are just around the Pentagon, and nothing. No, for some reason, just like when the guy was shot 46 times in Saginaw, for some reason, I guess the cameras just weren't working that day. Although the FBI and the Secret Service and whoever went around the neighborhood of the Pentagon and gathered up all the surveillance cameras. I wonder how they got them all and did something with them. It's just astonishing to me that there is no curiosity, by our crack news media in this country who are charged with finding the truth.
Well, they're too busy keeping up with the Kardashians.
Or them or Tom Cruise and his ex-wife.
I wanted to talk a little bit about Senator Stickass up there. I forget his name, up in Wisconsin. Mr. I'm going to make it child abuse for single parents same-sex couples in there as well as parents. Yeah. You know, he's part of the religious right, too, probably.
Oh, I'm sure.
Which makes me sick.
There's no question.
He looks like a creeper to me. He looks like somebody you would see in a, let's say, an airport bathroom tapping his foot.
or someone sneak around the bushes trying to peek into your kitchen window.
Yeah, just a real creep.
Or bedroom window.
What upsets me about it, though, is, you know, the real child abuse comes from these freaky Christian people. And the abuse goes especially towards gay, bi, lesbian, transgender kids, mm-hmm. especially. How many have killed themselves over this freaky religion and people like this?
Oh, sure.
You know, that's child abuse. Why is that not child abuse when a family does that, when they take their twisted religion and make a kid feel so bad at 13 years old that a child wants to kill himself? Or when a family that's so hell-bent on praising their twisted god of hate that they have to kick their teenage kid out of the house, put him out on the street,
mm-hmm.
And then you know what happens when the kids get out on the street, which is another thing we don't really talk about much.
No,
they get into prostitution and they get into the drugs. So why is that not child abuse?
Well, you and I both know it is, but the dominant religion in this country refuses to identify it as such. And
we
have to go along with the dominant religion, Philip, either that or we will be burned at the stake.
Yeah, well, I like warm climates, so that's why I'm in San Diego.
I
so
hear you.
Burning wouldn't bother me, but my God, you know, and I agree with you, too. I wake up in the morning. I'm in a good mood most of the morning. I wake up. It's nice here in San Diego in the morning. We've had good temperatures. And then I turn on the TV or I look at the news and read stuff, and I start getting irate. Today it was when I turned on C-SPAN and the debate on the health care thing, watching one Republican after another lie. It's a tax for the middle class.
Yeah, you got to stop that, Philip. When you want to turn on the television, just take a fork and stab your hand into the table. Don't go near the television tuner, okay?
Oh yeah, I think I'm gonna start like Dumbass Anonymous or something to keep me away from like watching dumbasses. Anyhow, Mike, I'll let you go. Good talking to you.
Okay.
Great program again tonight.
All right, thanks, Philip. Take care. Take care. Oh, my God. Dumbassery. It is the dominant attitude in this country right now. Good Lord. Do we have a break here? No, we don't. Not yet. Alan is in Philadelphia listening on XM. Hello, Alan.
Good evening, Mike. I think that FBI person probably saw dollar signs floating up in the air for writing a book.
She was a police officer. I guess she was FBI. Maybe that's it. But why wouldn't she have seen any bodies 3 hours after the crash?
The whole story, it's very strange to me. I don't understand it. Mike, I was driving on the road today, and I saw something that distressed me. I wanted to convey to you and the truth seekers.
Can you hold on to it for just a moment here while we have to take a break here and do some commercials, I guess. If you just stay right there, Alan, we'll come back right after this break because I want to hear what you got to say. All right, we'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Stimulating birth control, we're wanting less to eat. It's good news week. Doctors finding many ways of wrapping brains in metal trays to keep us from the heat. It's good news week. Someone's got the bomb somewhere. Philly, all right, now, tell us what you saw.
Yes, Mike, I was driving on the road, and I was passing a woman's health center, and the usual suspects were out there with their grotesque placards. But they put a new twist to it, which really distressed me. One of the usual suspects had in a car seat on a table an infant. And I was very distressed to see how they would exploit an infant to, you know, utilize the infant for their propaganda against women's reproductive rights. I've never seen that before. Have you ever seen them utilize an infant?
No. No, I haven't. But these people are clinically insane. They really are. You know, there was a time here in the Atlanta area, I guess it was about 15 years ago, when there was a lot of activity in Atlanta to close down the Feminist Women's Health Center, which is still open. And a lot of these crazy people showed up, and they would crawl across the street right through traffic. And, you know, cars would try to avoid them and screech on their brakes, but they would crawl across the street, mewling, "Mommy, don't kill me. Mommy, don't kill me." Oh, it was awful until finally the city of Atlanta, which is not like Georgia. You know, there is the city of Atlanta, and then there's Georgia. The city of Atlanta is fairly progressive, except they kind of lost it when Occupy wouldn't leave the campsite downtown. But I'm talking 15, 20 years ago. But this display of that kind of literally infantile behavior with women who are maybe 6 weeks pregnant, who have decided to terminate a pregnancy, because it's their body and it's their right. And then these adults, most of them, by the way, were male. Most of them wore short sleeve white shirts, which I hate. Most of them were overweight and clutching their Bibles and crawling across the street, mewling. It's just, I don't know. It was just so off-putting. You know what I'm saying?
No, absolutely. Look, they're myopic thinkers, but I just wanted to convey that to you and the truth seekers. Mike, keep it lit, and above all, don't let me hear you've been Bogarting those big fatties, Mike.
Never happened, Alan. All right. Thank you, sir. Take care. Thanks, Alan. I appreciate hearing from you. Charles, driving in Iowa, listening on XM. Hello, Charles.
How you doing, sir?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm just fine. I want to let you know I'm a first-time caller. I love your show. I've been listening to you for years.
Well, thank you.
And I wanted to talk a little bit about that 9/11 stuff, about the plane that went down and the Pentagon. And I've seen all that stuff on TV, and I'm kind of puzzled just like you and probably a lot of other people was, where's the plane, where's the seat, where's the wheel, where's the coffee pot? You didn't see none of that.
Yeah. I guess if your plane has been hit by a missile, which is probably what happened in Pennsylvania, or if a missile itself has crashed into the Pentagon, I guess you wouldn't find all those things. I don't know. Who knows? Who really knows, Charles, except the people who set it up, right?
That's right. It all seems kind of fishy to me. I always thought it was from the beginning, and I always will.
You're not alone, pal.
So anyway, that's all I wanted to talk about, Mike, and thank you for keeping me up at night.
All right. Thank you, Charles. Thanks. Thanks for tuning in. I appreciate it. Take care. Drive safely, okay? Ah, man. That's one of those, you know, the whole 9/11 story is something that I can't do programs on that. Here we are 11 years beyond that horror. And I can't do it. I can't talk about it. You know, I've tried. We've occasionally talked about it back in the day, you know, maybe 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 years ago. But I can't do it because I am so absolutely convinced, and I realize I may be 100% wrong, but I am absolutely convinced that the official story is not what happened. It just isn't. You know, these plane crashes, these buildings going down, especially when 3 years prior, the Project for a New American Century pretty much advocated another, what they called another Pearl Harbor, although that was a misnomer. But, you know, the neocons were advocating this. And especially when you look at what was the operation from the 60s, Kathy? Northwoods, Operation Northwoods, and how the Joint Chiefs of Staff in the Kennedy years had planned, I mean, exactly this, hijacked airplanes crashing into buildings in order to blame the Cubans and invade. I mean, come on. So I can't do that. Can't do that topic because I get that'll really you want to hear your old pal Mike Malloy go completely nuts. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. If you aren't getting the